Hear now this story from Mark's Gospel. Again, Jesus began to teach beside the sea. Such a very large crowd gathered around him that he got into a boat on the sea and sat there while the whole crowd was beside the sea on the land. He began to teach them many things in parables. And in his teaching, he said to them, "Listen, a sower went out to sow, and as he sowed, some seed fell on the path, and the birds came and ate it up. Other seed fell on rocky ground where it did not have so much soil, and it sprang up quickly since it had no depth of soil. And when the sun rose, it was scorched, and since it had no root, it withered away. Other seed fell among the thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked it, and it yielded no grain. Other seed fell into good soil and brought forth grain, growing up and increasing and yielding 30 and 60 and 100-fold." And he said, "Let anyone with ears to hear listen." When he was alone, those who were around him, along with the 12, asked him about the parables. And he said to them, "To you has been given the secret of the kingdom of God, but for those outside, everything comes in parables, in order that they may indeed look but not perceive, and may indeed listen but not understand, so that they may not turn again and be forgiven." And he said to them, "Do you not understand this parable? Then how will you understand all the parables? The sower sows the word. These are the ones on the path where the word is sown. When they hear, Satan immediately comes and takes away the word that is sown in them. And these are the ones sown on rocky ground. When they hear the word, they immediately receive it with joy, but they have no root and endure only for a while. Then when trouble or persecution arises on account of the word, immediately they fall away. And others are those sown among the thorns. These are the ones who hear the word, but the cares of the world and the lure of wealth and the desire for other things come in and choke the word, and it yields nothing. And these are the ones sown on the good soil. They hear the word and accept it and bear fruit 30 and 60 and 100-fold." Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Please pray with me. Oh God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight. Oh God, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. On Facebook this week, I came across a video from a Toronto ad agency featuring Canadians a little concerned about our elections. "As you're thinking about your future," they say, "we just want you to know that you guys are great." Reaching into our past, the Canadians offer examples they believe set us apart from our diversity to the birth of the disability rights movement to bluegrass and jazz. This encouragement from concerned Canadians brought to mind for me an essay from the novelist Marilyn Robinson, better known for her novel Gilead. "There is clearly a feeling abroad," she wrote, "that God smiled on our beginnings and that we should return to them as we can." Now, this is a sentiment that always makes me a little bit nervous, since I'm not always convinced that going backward in American history is going to be good for everybody. But Robinson is convinced. If we did return to our beginnings, she writes, we would find Moses as well as Christ, Protestant reformer John Calvin and his legions of intellectual heirs. It is a shocking thing to hear from a liberal intellectual, since Calvin is more often blamed by academics, not praised by them. The Lord commands us to do good unto all men universally, she quotes him as saying, even though, Calvin says, a great deal of people are undeserving. We must do so, Calvin said, not because of anyone's intrinsic character, but because of the image of God present in everyone. Robinson carefully traces this divine requirement of what we might call generosity toward others through the birth and the early years of our nation, from Winthrop's famous A Model of Christian Charity address to Puritans in 1630 to Jonathan Edwards' Sermon on Christian Charity. Like Calvin, Winthrop and Edwards read the law of Moses to require that generosity be extended to more than just people who are deserving, or more than just people of the same religion, or more than just people of the same tribe. Our enemies, Edwards said, those that abuse us and injure us, are our neighbors, and therefore come under the rule of loving our neighbors as ourselves. Now, if Marilynne Robinson is right, then there is a great deal more at stake in this upcoming election than conventions of decorum, fitness for leadership, or whose tax plan is going to best help the middle class. The values that are the oxygen of self-government, respect for neighbors, hospitality toward the stranger, and liberation for the oppressed, these foundational values are being threatened at their root. The assertion that all human beings are created equal, that faith statement at the core of American self-government, is being challenged once again. And the vote, that little piece of nonviolence that we all choose to embrace in the hope of solving disagreements without bloodshed, seems more precarious than it has ever been in any of our lifetimes. If you go back to the beginning, according to Robinson, you'll find Christ there teaching from Moses' law about good Samaritans, imploring us to love our enemies, not destroying them, requiring us to extend bread and justice, not just to those of our own kin, but to strangers and widows and orphans too. And maybe the loss of those values fits well with the parable that Jesus is teaching today. Those seeds don't always produce. Those seeds don't always take root. Some fall where the birds can easily pick them up on the rocky ground and among the thorns. The word doesn't always take. It pretty much explains our world today. Everything from terrorism to xenophobia to secularism to white supremacy. The word, it just doesn't always take root. Maybe that is what is happening to our country. The word just isn't taking root. That word of generosity that birthed America, however imperfectly, that led a nation of immigrants, that led suffragists to claim their right to vote, that led slaves and abolitionists to trumpet to secure their freedom, and civil rights marchers then claim to bring down Jim Crow. Maybe that word just isn't taking root like it used to before. Maybe the church is lacking in our own good soil. Maybe we've allowed the thorns, the cares of the world, and the lure of wealth to choke the seed that God gave us. That's one way to read this parable. Just an explanation for why things fall apart, why the social fabric is fraying on more than just the edges. That's one way to read Jesus' words, an explanation for everything that is wrong about us and wrong about our world. If that is true, then I don't have much more to offer to you this morning than anything offered by newspaper columnists and political commentators. I don't have much more to offer than secular essayists and TV pundits. That's what they all seem to be saying. Democracy is fragile. Shared power requires more than just treasured documents. It requires citizen trust, which is hard to come by on the left and on the right. If all that Jesus offers us this morning is an explanation for how it is that our world falls apart, then maybe we should have stayed home. But Jesus says this is the parable of the sower. This is the parable of the sower, not the parable of the soil. And this sower scatters seeds recklessly without regard to the condition of the soil. Seed goes everywhere. The gardeners that I know scatter seed with a lot more precision. They scatter seed where it's likely to grow, but not this one. The sower chooses to scatter the word all over the place, sowing the word everywhere. It's almost as though the sower isn't willing to give up on soil that she knows isn't likely to produce any results. The sower isn't willing to let go of the possibility that the word will work its way into the soil that we've decided has no chance of bearing fruit. It is a kind of generosity that borders on the ridiculous. And maybe that's the kind of generosity that we must relearn, especially when the soil of our nation seems so inhospitable to receive that kind of message. Scatter the word of do unto Syrian refugees and Muslims and political opponents as you would have them do unto you liberally, even though you know the soil isn't likely to receive it. Scatter that word of hope for immigrants and black lives that don't matter as they must generously, even when you know hope won't give you a return in the marketplace or at the ballot box. Scatter that word that all human beings bear the image of God regardless of their color or their party or their zip code all over the place when you know that word isn't likely to take root. As God bestowed his benefits on us, Calvin said in a sermon on Deuteronomy 15, let us beware that we acknowledge it towards him by doing good to our neighbors whom he offered unto us, so as we neither exempt ourselves from their want, nor seclude them from our abundance, but gently make them partakers with us, as folk that are linked together in an inseparable bond. Scatter that seed recklessly, knowing that stinginess and fear are not what lie at the heart of God, and they won't lead us anywhere. You know, walls that we put up around our hearts or our land cannot reflect the grace of a generous God. And I know that this kind of generosity sounds terribly naive at a time when people are petrified about terrorism and stagnant wages and dangerous people who might filter through the borders or into their neighborhoods. But as one of the leading sociologists pointed out recently, most Americans are living in the safest place at the safest time in human history. The Atlantic proclaimed 2015 the best year in history for the average human being. On balance, the world has not gotten more dangerous. It is certainly not more dangerous for most of us than it was for Jesus, or Calvin, or Winthrop, or Edwards. The world has not become more dangerous for most of us. We have just become a lot more fearful. And when has fear ever led our nation to good decisions? When has fear ever led you to a good decision? Miss Rumphius won the National Book Award in 1983, I think. I love that the heroine of the story is an unmarried woman who finds her calling late in life. It reminds us that God's seed can bear fruit at any time, and wisdom does not always come from what is new. Sometimes we do need to look to our past to find our future, and no one, hear me now, no one is too old to receive a call from God. And most of all, we find that calling only when we are sharing something with the world, making the world a more beautiful place. The author dedicated the book to Saint Nicholas, patron saint of children and sailors and maidens. There are lots of legends about old Saint Nick, but the one that carries the most historical probability is an incident involving three poor maidens who could not afford a proper dowry, leaving them, according to the time, very vulnerable to poverty and exploitation. And so in secret, Saint Nicholas goes to the house of the three maidens under the cover of night. And taking three purses of gold, he tosses them through the window of the house, one for each maiden. Surprisingly, Saint Nicholas is remembered both for his excessive generosity and as the defender of orthodoxy, for defending the faith. A shocking thing to hear, since orthodoxy and generosity seldom join hands in the sentences that we create. But maybe in these perilous times, orthodoxy, which translates roughly correct thought or correct practice, orthodoxy is exactly what needs defending. Not orthodoxy around the size or role of government or education or tax policy. Not orthodoxy around the role of government programs versus the role of the private sector. These are all legitimate questions for people to debate, for parties to advocate, and for Republicans and Democrats and Greens and Socialists and Libertarians to argue together in good faith. No, what needs defending and what the church must defend with its life is the doctrine of generosity, of open-handedness that we find at our beginnings, The doctrine of generosity demanded by the law of Moses and the law of Christ. Doctrine that announces, there but for the grace of God go I. Doctrine that demands hospitality to strangers as first and foremost a privilege, not a burden. Some have entertained angels doing so. Doctrine that warns individuals and nations that building bigger barns or stepping over poor people at the gate or protecting our own as our first and greatest value is the best way to lose ourselves. And listen, if Jesus' parable is true, then I won't be discouraged, and you shouldn't either, when a whole lot of seed doesn't take root. Jesus is a realist on these things. A whole lot of people may never understand how it is that generosity to immigrants leads to a better world to everyone. A whole lot of people may never understand or accept that loving your neighbors is safer for you than fearing them. A whole lot of people may never believe that we human beings are linked together in an inseparable bond, even though God has said it is true. It won't matter because the kind of generosity that Jesus is sowing, it doesn't need a big plot, a very big plot to take root. The seeds that God is planting, seeds of hope, seeds of joy, seeds of love, when those seeds take root, seeds of justice and liberation and peace, they bring forth grain yielding 30 and 60 and 100-fold. Let anyone with ears to hear listen.